You're listening to The Drive with Zach Bye and Denver, Colorado's own Philip Lindsay on Denver's sports station, 104.3 The Fan.
Of Denver sports having double MVPs is coming into focus right before our eyes. Nikola Jokic, Nathan MacKinnon, both at the top of the leaderboard to something that never happens. Almost like literally ever. There is only one example in the history of sports where of the four pro sports teams, a town like Denver has double MVPs in hockey and in basketball. There's only one other example. In the late 1980s, when Wayne Gretzky won the Hart Trophy for the Los Angeles Kings,
yeah,
and Magic Johnson won the NBA's MVP for the Los Angeles Lakers. That is the last time that this was pulled off. And it actually might have been early 90s there in Los Angeles for that example. Maybe 1991. I'll circle back and double check here. But Mr. Philip Lindsay, Nikola Jokic, this is freaking crazy. It hit me like a ton of bricks when I opened up my Superbook app. Nikola Jokic is now minus 700 to win the NBA's MVP. Minus 700. If you're new to this and don't know what that means, let me say it in plain English like this. If you put $100 right now on Nikola Jokic to win the NBA MVP and he went and won it, your reward for your $100 bet would pay you $14.29. How wild is that?
Yeah, you might as well not even do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Like if you haven't bet it, definitely don't do it now.
So
it's not
minus
worth it.
700. So what if you put 700, right? If you say, okay, 700, that means you would get
100.
Just 100.
So if you wanted to win $100 on Jokic today to win the MVP, you have to fork over $700 as your risk, as your wager. And if he ended up winning, they'd give you that 700 back. Plus $100.
All right, I'm going to have to go call Otani, see if I can't place a bet.
Yes. Otani. Trying,
yeah.
Well, that's the only way to make money on this. You got to throw a couple million at it.
Yeah, for real. He'll give it to me.
Man. Goodness.
So 700 would only give you $100 back.
Yes. That's what minus 700 means.
So has that been, tell me the last time that you've seen something like that, Zach, where it's like, this is pretty much letting everybody know he's going to win the MVP.
It's over. There's 13 games left. Is it 13 or 14 games left?
I want to say 13.
Okay. Like, it's a wrap. I think Jokic may be able to miss the rest of the games and still win the award. And actually, I got to double check on that. But it's like, it is barring something catastrophic, Jokic is going to cross the finish line, and it doesn't matter what speed, he's winning the race.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's remarkable because it's unusual to have that much of a favorite with still 13 games left. I can tell you this has not been the case here in recent years.
Man, I keep saying it, and I'm going to say it again. We're spoiled, all right? He's getting ready to have his, how many, three? Third?
This is the third, yeah.
Third MVP, okay, has the opportunity to go out there, win another championship. And, oh, he probably will, if they win another championship, win the MVP of that championship.
The finals, yes.
So you're talking about a man that has putting up the stats on top of winning championships. Like, this is wild. Now tell me about my boy Nathan MacKinnon.
Yes, he is the leader in the clubhouse right now at a much smaller number. He is minus 125 to win the Hart Trophy. Now the Avs, they have 13 games left in the year. 9 of the 13 are at home. So what an opportunity for the Avs to really, like, storm into the playoffs. Minus 125, meaning that if you bet $125 for Nathan MacKinnon to win the MVP and he won it, you get that $125 back plus $100. So it's almost pays 1-to-1. You can, it's close to that. But both are favored both our favorite. Jokic is going to win his.
Yeah, he's already solidified.
It's just a matter of can McKinnon finish the season strong. There's guys like Nikita Kucherov, Austin Matthews behind him. But if unless, like, McKinnon would have to really slow down at this point in the year for him not to across the finish line.
See, I'm going to say it like this. Nathan McKinnon will win the Hart Trophy if he can come up with another hat trick.
Another hat trick?
Yeah, just if he could come up with a hat trick and they win the rest of their games, or at home at least, stay on fire, he will win it. He will run away with it just because the Habs are winning. They're going to be the hot team. I keep saying they're the team to beat right now. They truly are. I can't wait to see what they come out with tonight.
Yeah, Columbus Blue Jackets tonight, 7 o'clock at Ball Arena. And, I'd go so far to say, like, now if he has another hat trick, it's one of, like, those signature moments.
That's what I'm kind of talking about. Like, to solidify it, that's what I want. I want that signature moment to where you know that nobody else is getting ready to catch you,
that
right?
That would be like, if McKinnon got another hat trick, that'd be like spiking the football. Like,
yes.
It's like, yeah, I mean, that would just make it a slam dunk case. I think both are going to win it. I think it's going to be a really cool feather in the cap of Denver sports for two guys that are similar, that play for similar teams, that have similar arcs of where they came from at similar times to when they won at similar times, 1 year off from one another. And they're, you know, they're both favored, not favored, like the number one, but they're both among the top two or three favorites to win it again.
You know what I'm thinking right now? I'm envisioning both the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche winning it all, winning the cup, winning the championship, and having the parade meshed together, right? And having someone like Nathan McKinnon and Jokic on the same stage together, raising the trophies.
Ace trophies.
Come on, tell me that would never have happened anywhere else.
No. No, and if they do it that way, I'll get totally on board, of course. There's no right or wrong answer here. I think that both of those champions deserve their own parade, and if I can split it up and make one day two,
we've already won.
Yeah.
We've already won before. We've already had separate parades.
Yeah.
Now it's time to Now it's time to come together.
You know what?
Unity.
You know, this was my stance the last time, but since they both already did win, I guess I'd be open to it. I don't think it would happen, but they are both under the same ownership group, and if they wanted to pull it off, they have the ability to, and the relationships, obviously, because they're, you know, they're owned by the same family.
They're looking at the mirror.
Pretty much. So I guess I'd be open to that this time around, but I just think it's hysterical that Jokic is that much of a favorite, McKinnon's a favorite, and Jokic, if Jokic goes and does this, he'll be just the ninth player in the history of NBA basketball to win three regular season MVPs, joining just Bill Russell, Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Moses Malone, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James. And you'll have to say Nikola Jokic's name next to those all-time greats.
MVP. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
From now on, when I step foot in, you know, in this building and we get on air, come on, Jay, I want MVP. Chant it for me, all right?
Listen to this guy. Like, he wants the MVP his rookie year. Is he Kareem? Like, what? Goodness
You're
gracious.
Right. It is my rookie year. Uh-oh.
All right. I should have you carry bags. That's what you should be doing around here. All right. I have some good news, and I have some bad news for the next quarterback of the Denver Broncos, and we'll comb through it coming up next. Baby, let me. I did it again, so I'm going to let go. Oh, my. I have some good news and some bad news for the next quarterback of the Denver Broncos. Tell you exactly what that is in just a second. But first, here to tell you, you can join Mike Evans at the Ameristar Blackhawk tonight from 6 to 8 o'clock. Catch all the March Hoops action on all their amazing screens. They have the best food in Blackhawk, and you can register to win some incredible prizes. including a staycation in one of their luxurious spa suites. All right, and they'll be giving away three of those tonight. They have $5 apps, including cheesy fries, slides, nachos, and pizza. The sportsbook at Ameristar can be your tournament headquarters during March. For more information, go to AmeristarBlackhawk.com. Hanging out with Mike Evans after hours at a casino. That is interesting.
The question is, Zach, are you going to listen to what Mike has to say when it comes to your money?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I don't trust Mike's gambling advice farther than I could throw him, and I can't pick him up. So I should tell you everything you need to know.
Well, there you go.
Although I do love Mike. All right. I have to shoehorn that in at the end.
You got to. Because he's going to come for vengeance. You know that.
I have some good news and some bad news for the next quarterback of the Broncos, Mr. Phil Lindsay. You know, I've heard some of the other shows comment on this, tweet that got put out there, the math that got put out there from Mike Clay, the longtime numbers and roster analyst for ESPN, covers the NFL very closely. And every year, he does this player-by-player grading, and then he adds up the players in each unit and goes off those ratings and creates a unit ranking.
Yeah.
And then he'll add up all the unit rankings and you can get a grade for one side of the ball or a ranking 1 through 32 on each side of the ball. So you have a ranking on offense, a ranking on defense based on the rankings of each unit of the team. And when it comes to the offensive side of the ball for the next quarterback of the Denver Broncos, I have good news and bad news. What do you want first?
It's Friday. We're rolling downhill. Let's go with the good news.
Broncos have one of the best offensive lines in the NFL.
Okay.
They have invested incredibly in the position, and according to Mike Clay, unbiased, looking at each of those units, 1 through 32 in the NFL, the Broncos had a top 10 offensive line coming in at 10th league-wide.
You know what? It makes sense, Zach, because of how much money they have given that offensive line and how much more money they're going to have to give that offensive line if they want to stick together. And if that's the case and they have a great year this year, they're going to have to give some of those young men on the offensive line more money.
Yeah, Quinn Miners.
Quinn Miners being the number one.
Comes to mind, right? And it's the same reason they just had to say goodbye to Lloyd Cushenberry. And now it's going to be likely it's going to be Alex Forsyth, who they drafted in the very late rounds last year. So, but when you look at Garrett Bowles, when you look at Ben Powers, you look at Quinn Miners, you look at Mike McGlinchey, all things considered, and not saying it's perfect or number one, but set up pretty good for whether it's Jarrett Stidham or Bo Nix or fill in the blank, whoever plays quarterback for the Broncos is going to have a pretty rock solid offensive line in front of them.
Yeah, they're going to be rock solid, and we're talking about an offensive line that stuck together the whole entire year, and you know, it came down to the last game of the year.
Good memory. Right? Yep.
Where was it? It was McGlinchey who ended up having to miss.
It was McGlinchey.
McGlinchey ended up having to miss, or they would have had offensive line there the whole entire year. So you're having a line that seems to be fairly healthy, you know, going into the year, and hopefully they can stay healthy. And they do a great job run blocking, and they're going to have to do that if they go in there and pick up a young quarterback.
The bad news: whoever plays next quarterback for the Denver Broncos, outside of offensive line, when it came to this ranking from Mike Clay of ESPN, the Broncos had the 26th ranked running back room, the 24th ranked wide receiver room, the 24th ranked tight end room. So you have the offensive line, but the skill position players that need to, you know, maybe elevate that quarterback or try to, they're just not there through the scope of an NFL lens.
Yeah, but this is the thing. When you look at a situation, okay, down in Boulder with Coach Prime, he did something that I do not like when coaches say or do. Build from the outside in.
Mm.
Everybody knows, okay, it's all about the trenches from the offensive line to the defensive line. All right, the Broncos are doing a good job now solidifying their offensive line.
Yep.
Now going there, adding some pieces to their defensive line, that's where it all starts. Then you start to build out. You know, if somebody like Greg Dulcich would have panned out last year, then you're sitting there with another weapon that's ready to go, locked and loaded. But we don't know what we're going to have out of Dulcich. But I'm okay with having an offensive line sitting right in front of me that's solid and finding ways to get better on the outsides, the receivers, the running backs. I do think that we have a solid running core, running back core. Okay, Javonte Williams is coming off that ACL, but now he's 1 year out of this whole situation where
yes.
You know what I mean? Where he's in the blue now, right? He's ready to roll. He's not hurting, and I want to see what he can do with that. You got Jaleel McLaughlin ready and locked and loaded to explode and have his time to shine. Okay, battle for that starting spot. I think that's what's in his mind right now. And you got Samaje Perine that sits there. He's a durable target that you can have every single game.
I want to put a pin in the running back room and return to that at the top of the hour, because we're going to have a conversation that is relevant to the running back room and mainly Javonte Williams. Let me just put a bow on this and ask you the question. I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What would you rather have for a new quarterback, Stidham or otherwise? A solid offensive line with lacking playmakers, or solid playmakers with a lacking offensive line?
Hands down, solid offensive line, lacking playmakers. You can go out there and you can find those diamonds in the roughs. Zach, I wasn't drafted, but I was able to get into this situation and be explosive. They can find somebody like that. It doesn't just have to be an undrafted player. It could be a player from free agency that nobody's thinking about. Somebody that can come here, fit this system, and have some explosive plays. That's what we need.
Full cosign. Rather have the solid offensive line. And that's what we have here in Denver. So if you're looking for silver linings, and I am on a day like today, on a Friday, a little positivity going to the weekend, the Broncos have one of the better units in the NFL in a unit that's really hard to construct and get there. And they have. So that's a good baseline to work with going into 2024. All right. As we shift gears here, are the Avalanche inching closer to an honor they'd rather avoid? That's coming up next.
Make this deal with all the ice on in the booth. At the gate outside, when they pull up, they give me loose. Yeah, jump out, boys. That's Nike boys hopping our coast, coast. Way too big when we pull up, give me the loot. What's off the Remy? Had up at post.
Are the Avs inching closer to an honor that they'd rather avoid? We haven't talked about this at all because it hasn't been as relevant at really any point this season that it is this week. And I'm talking about the Colorado Avalanche being the hottest team in pro hockey, 44-20-5, first in the Central Division. They have 13 games left in the season. 9 of the 13 are home. So the Avs have an opportunity to go into the playoffs with incredible momentum, but also a possibility of winning the President's Trophy, which comes with its own conversation.
Yeah.
And the President's Trophy, of course, goes to the regular season best team in the NHL. Feels cool at the time, but the history, for whatever reason, and we can talk about the reason, the history of it is very unkind to the team that actually is the best regular season team in the NHL.
Yeah, man, it's scary. It's scary. It's a scary situation to be in. Isn't that kind of crazy to say?
Yeah.
Like, you're the best team pretty much in the NHL, all right, had the best record, and you're scared to get this award.
Yeah. isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's like being on the Madden cover or something. Like,
yes,
like,
yes, yes.
Do you really want to be on the Madden cover? Like, it's really cool to do, but my career and my body is more important than sitting here on a cover if it's haunted or if it's cursed.
And what do most guys probably say to themselves? That's not real. I'll go on the cover, because how could I not? I'm not going to be scared to not go on the cover.
For sure.
And that's a very relevant analogy, because I think a lot of teams get there and are like, guess what? We don't give a damn about the history. We're our own team. We're going to go win it, and then we'll go win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Problem is, history just frowns on the correlation between the team that wins the President's Trophy and the team that goes and wins the Cup. In fact, I went back and looked at the history of this puppy, okay? Just look at the last 10 years. The last 10 years. In 9 of the last 10 years, the team that won the President's Trophy is out in the first or second round.
Oh, first or second?
Not one team in the last decade has been the regular season's best team, won the President's Trophy, and gone on to win the Stanley Cup. In fact, Boston was last year the greatest regular season in the history of pro hockey. First round. Florida Panthers. First round. Out. Goodbye. Goodbye. It was the Florida Panthers 2 years before that.
So why do you think that is? Like,
and by the way, Florida Panthers 2 years ago lost in the second round. So it's like, it goes like that. Second round, lost in the first round, second round, second round, second round. It's crazy.
So are you scared?
Yes.
I would put on the bone crusher. I ain't never scared because I think that's what they're playing right now. You know, like, of course, you don't want that to happen to you. But then again, it's like, you may not have no choice. You guys may be so good that you're able to win these games. Like truly, you may be able to win these games, especially being at home. What are you supposed to do? Pull everybody off the ice?
Right, and that's why I think it's a relevant conversation. And when you say, hey, are you scared? I say yes, because that's, but it, you know, scared wouldn't be the word. It just, the reason why I believe that, and this isn't a new theory here, but teams that are the best in the regular season, they empty too much of the tank. They empty too much of the tank, and there's just not a left to put into overdrive when your season's on the line in the playoffs. And it's just, it's hard for me to ignore not just the history in the last 10 years, where 9 of the last 10 President's Trophy winners are out in the first or second round, but since they have been giving this award, it started in 1985, the inception of this trophy, only 8 teams in 38 years have gone on to win the Stanley Cup. That means 30 teams were the best in the entire regular season and couldn't get it done. So,
man, oh man.
I find it fascinating. But let me build this in here.
Okay, pump the brakes.
You know who was one of the 8 teams that did it? The 2001 Colorado Avalanche.
Okay. So they have a blueprint.
Yes.
Okay, they have a blueprint.
Yes.
I think this time though, we're not so top heavy. After making those moves with Casey Middlestat, Sean Walker, you know, a couple other depth pieces.
Yep.
We're not so top heavy in that first line where it's like, man, this is going to be one of these situations where we're going to burn ourselves out. Second, I don't think that they're going for it, right? They may just it may just fall in their lap because their schedules are winnable games. They have a lot of home games. They're dominant at home. That's not their fault. That's not our fault. But it's a mindset, right? And they shouldn't care about it. It is what it is. We want the best thing. We want to be able to be the Grim Reaper at this point.
Oh,
we've
I like
done
that.
It before.
I like that.
All right, we've done it when we were in 2008. Yeah. Why can't we do it again? Let's not be that team that doesn't do it. Let's go out there and do it because we are the Grim Reaper.
Well, it was 2001, just to be clear, not 2008. But by the way, one of the 8 times was in 2008 when the Red Wings won the President's Trophy. So you stumbled into that there.
Yeah, I got mixed up.
No, I've seen it.
Yeah,
but it's like... You just happened to say 2008, which is one of the rare years where it actually happened. So the Avs did win the President's Trophy 3 seasons back, 2020, 2021, second round exit. Remember who they lost to that year, Drew?
That was Vegas, wasn't it?
That was Vegas.
Yep.
And they had a 2-0 lead in that series, did they not?
Yes, they did.
And lost 4 straight.
And lost 4 straight in an ugly, ugly fashion.
Yes.
That thing fell off a cliff in a hurry.
It did. It did. So you're good, but I was gonna say you're good with going for it. You're good, not going for it, but it organically happening,
yeah.
And you have no superstition about this.
You know, I'm a superstitious kind of guy. You know that. You know, I like my weird world. But if something's just sitting there and you can't help it and it just happens, it is what it is. Then I guess it's just one of those things where it's just gonna have to be what it's gonna be because we're going for it all.
Drew Spivak behind the glass. What is your thoughts of the President's Trophy?
I don't want it this year, and I say this for it's not necessarily the jinx, you know, that we kind of talk about with it. I don't want it for a different reason because if you look at the standings right now, the Avalanche finished with the number one seed in the Western Conference, that means they're likely to be facing the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs as the second wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
A Vegas team that's going to get healthy. Once you don't have to worry about the salary cap and long-term IR anymore.
They've schemed that whole system.
They totally have. And listen, I know fans don't like it, but I respect it. Like, it's up to the NHL to put the clamps down on it. But
yeah,
as great as Nashville's playing right now, I know Nashville's got a point in like 16 straight games or something like that.
Yes.
They're playing great. I would rather play them in that first round than Vegas. So for me, I just say, listen, if this happens organically, it is what it is. but I'm not making a push to go for that President's Trophy. Because remember what happened last year, guys. They went for a push to win the division. By the time they got to the playoffs, they were gassed.
Yeah, that and one of their best players was on the gas.
Yeah,
so
that didn't help either.
Look at you guys. Look at this is the song that the Colorado Avalanche are coming out to. You got it ready, KJ?
What do you got cooking there?
Come on now.
Is this what you're gonna hit me with, like Stevie Wonder? Oh, Never Scared. I thought you were gonna go Superstition.
This is what they're gonna walk out to, y'all.
KJ.
Oh man.
Okay, you can keep that low for a second. What is your thoughts on the President's Trophy?
So, in a typical case, I am against it, but the Avs have something. They have a chance to do something unique here, and I believe in my heart of hearts that Jerry Bednar has coached his team to the point where they're not worried about anything. They're not worried about anybody. They understand there's a goal. There's a mission. They've dealt with enough crap here in the last 11 to 12 months that it's like, hey, we know what it means to be razor focused, razor sharp. And I think the Avs are getting ready to get back to that place. We're seeing glimpses of it. We won't really see it until the first round, and then we'll all look at each other like, if this team doesn't win at all, this season will be a failure. That's what I think they're trending towards, and we'll see the fruition of it come the first round of the playoffs.
We'll see. I do trust the group. I have a tendency to trust the group, so we'll see where the chips fall. We had history made in Denver sports last night. Tell you what it is coming up next. But he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man, and my body is much worse than my bites. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might. Happy Friday to you.
It's my song right here. My mom and I, man, we used to sit at the computer and look at YouTube and just bring up different kind of songs from Maroon 5 to Hall & Oates, you know, to the Eagles, just every song.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just like listen to it, you know, listen to it together.
I love it.
Yeah.
I am all for Hall & Oates. Happy Friday. You guys made it to the weekend. Knew you could do it. And we're inching closer and closer to our weekend, and we appreciate you making us a small part of your Friday. All right, Phil, we had history made in Denver sports last night. History, okay? And this is a type of lasting history because, you know, nowadays you'll hear say, hey, it's the first time ever that someone scored 30 points and had 14 rebounds with 7 assists on 57% shooting against the San Antonio Spurs on a Tuesday. And it's like,
with 2 minutes left in the game.
It's like, okay. Yeah,
making up stuff.
But we had real history made last night. So the Denver Nuggets win against the New York Knicks 113-100 at Ball Arena in a payback game because the Knicks beat the brakes off the Nuggets earlier in the season. I think it was January. Gave them their biggest loss of the year. And Denver goes to 13-2 since the All-Star break. And there's a handful of storylines. But I don't know if there's a storyline bigger than Michael Porter Jr. right now.
Yeah.
And what he's doing for the Nuggets.
He's hot.
He's not just hot. Although he is that. He has now made 193 three-pointers this season, which is the new single-season franchise record.
Okay.
Past Dale Ellis, who did made, I think it was 192 in the 96-97 season. So in the literal sense, no one in the history of the Denver Nuggets has made more threes in any season than Michael Porter Jr. has this year with still 13 games left on the schedule.
That's big time, man. MPJ is turning it on at the right times. I've always been taught, especially in football, and I know it really has to do with hockey and basketball, as it's a marathon, not a sprint, especially in those sports.
Sure.
And that's kind of how this is with MPJ, Zach. I mean, he started off really cold. You know, we were talking bad. I was talking down because I didn't know what to expect, and I was kind of upset that we weren't getting what I thought we should be getting.
It wasn't just you. It wasn't just you. It was a lot of the fan base.
But this is a marathon. And he's starting to pull away at the right times when we need him the most. And it looks great, man. It's one of those things where he is that number two option right now. Right now. Somebody, said MPJ is the number two option right now, but Jamal Murray will always be the best number two option. And that is always going to be the case, right? But I love that we're even having this discussion about MPJ.
It's pretty cool. He's earned it. And when you start talking about single season franchise record, even where he had like a month and a half where it seemed like he would shoot 50% one out of every like seven games.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tough to watch there for a bit. And in that same season, he still has found a way to make the most threes. It feels like every single game he's shooting 40% or better. I mean, you look at this month, it's 3 for 6, 4 for 7, 4 for 9, 2 for 5, 5 for 9. It's like, it's now, and I know Jokic talked about it. His teammates have talked about it. They talk about it on the broadcast. When that is now leaving his hands, you're expecting it to go in.
Yes.
Expecting it to go in.
There was a couple times last night where it didn't go in, and I thought it was going to go in. You know, he could have had more points than 31.
He could have.
Could have had 34, 35 points.
Yeah.
But, man, he's turning it on, and it's good to see. I'm excited about it. I get hyped to see it for some reason. And I would be the first to raise my hand and say, you know, I didn't think I was going to ever see this from MPJ. And I'm glad that he's proven me wrong, but can he stay consistent with it? That's going to always be the question for the rest of this season and then going into the playoffs.
That's really the only question, because we know on any given night he can explode. That's been the case, okay? But it's just about the consistent nature of it or the lack thereof that creates these conversations. But you want to know what? You know what used to be the conversation with Michael Porter Jr.? Was the health.
Yeah.
Was the back. I mean, who has 3 back surgeries before the age of 25? Michael Porter Jr., we weren't sure.
I've never heard of nobody like that.
We weren't sure if this guy was going to be a viable professional basketball player. And we don't even have those conversations anymore. So he rounded the consistency corner physically, and now we're seeing his game round the consistency corner on the floor. And he has improved his scoring. Like, if you look at the month of December, he averaged 14 points a game. In the month of January, he averaged 15 points a game. In the month of February, he averaged 19 points a game. And in the month of March, he's averaging 21 points per game. So for 4 months in a row, dude, he has increased his scoring average.
Yes.
That is a real arc to follow. It's not like disjointed up and down. It's every month has gotten better and better for a long time now.
But why? Like I sit back and maybe, you know, you know this a little bit more than I would. Why? What are you seeing from MPJ? That's kind of like, there has to be something there that you see and say, okay, this is why this is happening, because he's been staying consistent in this thing right here, whether it's mentally, whether it's just his shot, his routine, like something about what he's doing is clicking, and he's able to do it consistently, and he has that confidence.
Man, I don't think I can point to one thing. The confidence is so huge, man. When you're a shooter, like, it's so tough to, when you're in a rut, I'm sure for him, and he would never say this out loud because he carries himself with supreme confidence, but when you're a shooter who can't shoot, that's pretty deflating. So when you have a 6-week period where you miss so many shots, and then that negative energy gets re-cemented every other night, every third night, that's tough. But I look at the All-Star break. I look at him getting away, took this trip to Cabo, reset himself, came back, had a different swagger about him. You're seeing his teammates lean into him more.
Yeah.
Trust him more. You're seeing the coaching staff start to design more stuff for him. You're seeing Jokic work with him directly in a 2-man game late in games. That hasn't been the case. And all that together. But unfortunately, I wish I had more of a concrete answer. I just don't. And I don't know if there is one that exists.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is the confidence piece, his teammates getting him involved, someone like Jamal Murray giving him those opportunities that maybe he would pass up on and take shots. He's now getting MPJ more involved with that. Jokic doing what Jokic does best and getting his whole entire team involved.
Yeah.
And like I said, the confidence of it, man. He's doing dunks. He's being more physical.
Yes.
Hitting stuff off the banking it off the backboard, coming out like it's and-one mixtape stuff.
Right.
Like, this is the stuff that nobody really gets to see from MPJ, and he's starting to come around, come out of that shell at the right time.
Totally. Totally. And how about that play where he's, like, stuck, like, kind of on the free throw line, and he's got two defenders on him.
Yeah.
And instead of freaking out, he's just taking the game as it comes and steps through, throws it off the glass to himself for a dunk. We talked about that play about three, four weeks ago, because I think it was Victor Wembanyama who did it.
Yeah,
And I was like, the first guy I ever saw do that was Tracy McGrady in the All-Star game. And then I during a commercial break, I pulled up YouTube and showed you Kobe doing it against the Utah Jazz in like 2008. That was the first one I ever saw do it in a regular season game. Toss it off the backboard. Now we're seeing guys like almost once a month it's popping up, twice a month, and it's just a different layer of the game that has been underutilized. If you and talking about outside the box, like, you wouldn't even have thought to do that 20 years ago, 30 years ago. And we're seeing guys do it on a fairly regular basis. So really, really cool for Michael Porter Jr. And let me shoehorn this last comment in here before we shift gears. Michael Porter Jr., we talk about his performance, and it's such shooting-based. He's turning into an all-around basketball player, not just with the rebounding and the assist. It's the three-level scorer. Yes, I can make threes. That means guys have to rush out on me. I can use their momentum against them for one-dribble pull-ups, mid-range jump shots.
For sure.
And you're seeing him a lot now take it all the way to the basket and either try to dunk it, or he's incorporated a floater into his game.
I've seen that.
Where it gets traffic down low and he just goes to the float game like Jokic does. And Michael Malone talked about his more dynamic scoring these days.
Just the ability to put the ball on the floor, operate in traffic, and then go up and finish. That's to me is the, as you mentioned, 13 of 16, only took six threes, and all the other ones were right at the rim, and he was finishing at a very high percentage.
So good for Michael Porter Jr. It's so fun to watch. And what's good for the Goose is good for the Gander, because what is great for Michael Porter Jr., man, it could extend this championship window. I mean...
It's right there, man. It's right there. It's going to make it an easier way in a situation where everybody has stacked up. It's not like last year. Right, going for this championship window, it's going to be a little tougher.
Yeah.
But when you have someone like MPJ coming along, all right, you have Jamal Murray. Hopefully he's okay.
Yeah.
Right? I think that he needs to take some time off now, Zach.
Okay, and if those who don't know, a little tweak of the ankle last night in the final minute. Go figure. Final minute. Doesn't look serious, but we never know how stuff swells up and stuff.
For sure. So I see him taking a couple days off. And then Jokic doing what Jokic does best. It's good to see this, man. It's good to see what they're doing as a whole, as a team. And I think that when Jamal Murray is in the game with someone like Michael Porter Jr. and Joker is in the game with Michael Porter Jr., it takes pressure off of Michael Porter Jr. because now they have to sit here and find out what Jamal and Jokic are doing, which is giving MPJ those opportunities.
Yeah. Well, I love the energy around the team right now. They've been absolute gangbusters coming out of the break. There was a possession last night where MPJ could have shot it, but shot faked it, gives it to Jokic. Jokic catches it with one hand, whips it to Aaron Gordon underneath the basket, who catches it with one hand, who whipped it out to the corner for a wide open three. And it's just like that, like basketball pornography.
Yeah.
Like just like chef's kiss. Incredible. They play the game the right way. And that's why we both believe we're going to have another parade here this summer.
What about Jokic's?
Oh my gosh!
You know what I mean? Well, over the shoulder, like from an angle. It was like who does that? He was not even looking.
I know.
He got the angle right
to find MPJ in the corner.
And one mixtape stuff. He learned that from me, hot sauce style.
That was incredible.
Yeah,
that pass was incredible. Those who say that Jokic's game is boring or it's not flashy just don't watch him enough.
No, you got to watch it.
You got to watch it. You got to watch it.